I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the Silent Majority Foundation has filed suit to challenge the masking rules that led to felony charges against election observers in Island County, Washington. Plus, a local teachers union has deleted a social media post about hate that was clearly targeted at a female athlete. And happy Aromantic Sexual Awareness Week, everyone. One and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. And welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here on this Wednesday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. So we have a couple updates on exclusive stories that we brought you over the last few days. First, I want to go back to Island County, Washington. So you guys know we've had now two of the Republican election observers who had been removed from the ballot counting watch area because they refused to wear a mask. And the auditor in Island County had made a masking rule. This is just in the November election. Yes, in 2024, there was a masking rule. And so Tim and Tracy had declined to wear masks and they were escorted out of that room by law enforcement. And as you know, because we've talked about it on the show, they are now, well, Tim has already been charged with a felony. Tracy has been threatened to be charged with a felony, which is already on its face insane. And then you add in the fact that the prosecutor, Greg Banks, in Island County has a long track record of posting insane things about Republicans and Trump supporters on his social media pages. In fact, he had been called out for it publicly a couple years ago in the news, and now he thinks it's no big deal because, well, I deleted my Facebook account, but in case you need a reminder, he had compared Trump supporters to the KKK. He said Republicans are racist bullies with second grade intellects, said we need to cleanse society of their diseased thinking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the whole premise of everything is insane. Today, the Silent Majority Foundation has filed a lawsuit on behalf of really Washingtonians, I would argue, but on behalf of those two Republican, actually three Republican election observers. We haven't talked about a third one of them. So they filed this in Superior Court for the state of Washington in Island County. Tim Hazelow, Tracy Abel, and James Peterson are the plaintiffs, and it is versus Island County, Washington, and Sheila Kreider in her official capacity as Island County auditor. So, and also, by the way, Gregory Banks is named in this in his official capacity as Island County prosecuting attorney. So in a nutshell, the Silent Majority Foundation says the case challenges the authority of Island County officials to impose a mask mandate on ballot observers. Plaintiffs argue that the rule issued by defendant Kreider and supported by the Island County Canvassing Board exceeds the authority granted under Washington law and election regulations. So they're not filing a lawsuit in essence that would stop or intervene in the felony charges against Tim Hazelow, the possible felony charges against Tracy Abel. They're not defending them per se, but in a way they are. So what they're getting at the heart of is they don't believe that WAC, the administrative code, or anything in Washington state law gives the Island County auditor the authority to institute what is essentially a health regulation, to say you have to wear masks if you want to be an election observer. So the question then would become, if a court rules that the auditor didn't have the authority to mandate masks in the first place, then do the criminal cases against these election observers go away? You would think they would have to. Now, the Island County prosecutor seems dead set on moving forward with felony cases, thinks he's totally righteous. He wrote it to us in a long email about why this case is justified, and essentially he is a protector of democracy, doesn't have to recuse himself, even though he clearly hates Republicans and everything they stand for and wants to rid the nation of their diseased thinking. So I give a lot of credit to the Silent Majority Foundation for stepping up on this one. And this is a case that could have some wide-reaching implications. I mean, the mask nonsense isn't done in Washington state, not by a long stretch. I mean, this was just 3 months ago, well past the pandemic, when the auditor in Allen County said, yeah, you've got to wear masks. Like long past when we realized that especially those kind of masks weren't going to really do a whole lot. Not to mention that there's video evidence that there were individuals allowed in that room without masks on after Tracy Abel was escorted out. And the officers who came in to escort out both Tim and Tracy weren't wearing masks. So why were they allowed in the ballot counting area without masks on? So there's a lot of inconsistencies. There's clear lawfare at play here. But let's start with, and as the Silent Majority Foundation is trying to do, let's start at the very beginning of this. All this stuff that's happened since, let's start at the very beginning. Did they have the lawful authority to require these election observers to wear a mask? If the answer is no, then it seems like everything, the fruit of the poisonous tree, everything that came after that would be sort of null and void. One would only hope. So that's what's happening there. Also, we have an update on, so we've had these two excellent interviews you need to watch. One of them aired on Sundays with subscribers. We played clips from both of them on Monday's and Tuesday's show. First with Frances Stout, who is a basketball player in the Tumwater School District, who decided to sit out her last game of the year because she's like, I'm not going to play against a biological boy. There was a biological boy on the other team named Andy, who actually joined us on the show yesterday. The entirety of that interview is going to air coming up this week on Sundays with Subscribers. But we had talked on the show, was it Monday? Tuesday, I think, about the Tumwater Education Association. So the teachers' union for the Tumwater School District had posted this on Facebook. Dear trans kids, this world is better with you in it, and you are worth fighting for. And they posted this whole thing. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But it's hate cannot drive out hate, blah, blah, blah. Like clearly, so this came after Frances told her story publicly and had pushed out, you know, her story and her version of events on social media. So this whole post from the teachers union about hate was very clearly targeted at one of their own students, at Frances Stout, which is just on its face completely inappropriate that you would have the teachers union, which represents the teachers in that district, including Frances's teachers, that they would come out and shame her for simply saying, I'm not playing against a biological boy. That's not fair. So the update on that is they took that post down. That takes a lot for a teachers union to be like, oh, let's delete that. I mean, they post all sorts of crazy, insane political nonsense. But I've got to say, I don't think they took it down for any sort of like thinking better of it, because we know that that's just not reality. I think there's two reasons they probably took it down. One is the school probably told them, you do realize that this makes it look like teachers are attacking a student when you're posting about no hate, no bullying, etc. And then the other thing is they were being eviscerated in the comments. I mean, it was glorious. If I was feeling down this week, I just went to the comments of this post and was like, I mean, people were absolutely losing their mind at this post because, again, they're not sticking up for, they're only sticking up for the small sliver of the trans community. And it has such an outsized influence on everything they do. And then in the process, they deem everyone else as these hate-filled individuals, including a sophomore girl. So it's just wild stuff. So I thought it was very telling. Either they're concerned about legal ramifications, or the school's like, you can't bully our own students online, or they were just sick of being absolutely dragged on social media, that the Tumwater Education Association took down that post. So I think that's good. I'll call it a tiny little win. One win for sanity. All right, another story we want to follow up on that's been happening. You know, we've been putting out these somewhat daily, I would say, action alerts during the legislative session. And the goal is to really give you a simple way to just click on a link and pro or con a bill, because I realize that it's hard to navigate the legislative process. I mean, it's hard for me, and I've been doing it for 15 years. And sometimes it's easier if you're just like, okay, what is the bill? And give me a link and I'll click on it. So we've been doing that. And I'll tell you that if you think that it doesn't make a difference, it absolutely does. And I think case in point is the pay per mile tax that they're trying to institute. There was like 20,000 people who signed in, and 99.9% of them were opposed to the pay per mile tax. So there's two bills on pay per mile, Senate Bill 5726 and House Bill 1921. They call it a road usage charge. So their argument being that, hey, you know, you've got more and more people buying electric vehicles, which means they're not paying a gas tax, which means they're not contributing to the transportation fund. So we want to either track every mile they drive through a transponder or have them, you know, show us their odometer every year, and then we'll tax them 2.6 cents per mile that they drive. I mean, it's riddled with problems. It's also, I mean, implementation problems. For instance, is the odometer reading going to be monitored? Is it going to be just somebody says, oh yeah, here's where my odometer is at for sure. That's all the miles I drive. How do you track miles driven out of state, not on Washington roads? And also people don't want a freaking, people don't want a transponder in their vehicle. And that's absolutely where this is heading to. So I will say, and I do think the overwhelming backlash against this policy and all the holes that were poked in it had an impact, because there was a Democratic leadership media availability yesterday. And Lori Jenkins, the Speaker of the House, was asked about this. And she didn't say that the pay per mile proposal is dead. But I've been following her long enough in politics to know, based on the way she worded this, I don't think it's going to go anywhere this session. Here she is.
I think we'll like a final whole package on road usage charge to the governor's desk this year. Maybe not, but certainly worth more conversation. I'm very pleased that the Transportation Committee and that the chair is looking at those things. What the bill looks like in the end and where it gets, I don't have a prediction yet, but I am very much appreciate that we're looking into the future instead of focusing, looking at the past.
Yeah, it's dead this session. That just doesn't, she doesn't sound optimistic about it. People, I mean, when you got 20,000 people and 99.9% of them are telling you it's a no-go, and when you haven't thought it through because they think through so few things, I really think this is going to end up being a victory. Now, that doesn't mean they're absolutely going to bring it back. And look, at some point, you have to move away from the gas tax. You know, look, taxation is theft. But beyond that, you know, there has to be some way to pay for road repairs and all these things. And is it fair if you have a gas vehicle and you're paying a tax at the pump, and then you have somebody who's driving an electric vehicle using the same roads and the same bridges and they're not paying for anything? No. But at the same time, you have to come up with a better, first of all, I don't think they'd get rid of the gas tax. And they want to go back and like reimburse people who also pay money for at the pump, but then also opt into the pay per mile thing. So I just feel like it's going to lead to people being double charged. I also think it's a workaround where they're going to spend the money on things besides roads and bridges, because right now you have to only spend the gas tax on these transportation projects and roads and bridge repair and all this stuff. So I think that this would lead to them spending it on other things. So there's a lot of problems with it. But if you think for a second that voicing your opinion on these bills and sending your lawmakers strongly worded yet polite emails doesn't make a difference, I can tell you it does. And so one other thing on the session, and we're going to talk about several other bills tomorrow, there's a really important cutoff happening this Friday. So this Friday, there's various cutoffs throughout the legislative session. This Friday is the policy committee cutoff. So if bills haven't been passed out of their policy committee by Friday, then they're essentially dead if they're not moving forward. Now, Olympia is Olympia, and they can find creative ways to resurrect anything. But if something isn't popular enough, even in its own committee that it was assigned to pass out of that committee, then it's probably not going anywhere for the session. So tomorrow we're going to talk about some things that are kind of teetering on the edge ahead of Friday, so you know about it. But as we send out those daily action alerts, please make sure you take 20 seconds to click on the link and voice your opinion. Even if your opinion isn't the same as mine, which, why would it not be? I'm essentially a genius, right? Humble genius. Humble genius. All right, we're going to talk about a shooting, another shooting on a King County Metro bus. It's really shocking. I guess I don't understand. I thought that you couldn't have guns on buses. I thought you couldn't. So I guess I'm just a little baffled as to why, how there could have been a shooting on a bus. So we have some stuff to work through there. First, I have told you guys over and over, take the First Mark challenge. Why? We all need insurance. You've got insurance, hopefully. The question is, do you have the right insurance at the right price? Instead of trying to figure that out yourself, because insurance is confusing as hell, have First Mark Insurance look into it for you. So the First Mark challenge is pretty simple. Basically, they look over your current insurance. You talk to them about your insurance needs. It takes like half hour to an hour on the phone. They go out, they shop the market for you, and they come back with their recommendations. They could say, hey, you know, we can't save you any money, so, you know, we're going to turn away your business, but that's just the right thing to do. That's what happened to Michelle. She said, as of this weekend, we took the First Mark challenge. They couldn't save us any money, but great to know they are saving a lot of people money. We had the best coverage and cost already, so it gave Michelle a little peace of mind. For Eric, it was a much different story. First Mark saved him 30% on his auto policy and 70% on his homeowner's policy. He says, I now tell anyone I know who is dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. I did, and I'm truly richer for it. So Join Michelle, Eric, and so many other Undivided viewers and listeners. Take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, again, I'm baffled by this. We have all this gun control that we've passed over the last 5 to 10 years that limit the kind of gun you can buy, that limit, you know, the background and all these things to try to keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people, making it more expensive, more cumbersome to own a firearm, to sell a firearm, you know, limiting magazine size, all these things. And shootings keep happening. And I'm just like, that's weird. Because I swear that all these policies were meant to stop shootings, right? Right? Definitely it's not about punishing law-abiding gun owners. It's 100% about stopping dangerous criminals who actually use guns to commit crimes, right? So this from Como News. Two injured in shooting aboard a King County Metro bus. Suspects still at large in Tukwila. So a 15-year-old on the bus shot 3 times in the chest. To me, whenever I hear that, gangs. I mean, obviously, gangs. So what's also interesting about this is specifically transit stations, bus stops, and by extension, transit vehicles were the subject of a bill last session to limit the ability to carry a firearm or any sort of weapon, which we talked a lot about last session because it just doesn't make any sense. These are some of the most dangerous places in the state when you look at the concentration of shootings and crimes and drug substance abuse issues and mental breakdowns and stuff on buses and on trains. So why would you want to limit the ability of a citizen to be able to defend themselves? And that's essentially what the bill was trying to do, is like, let's strip law-abiding citizens of any ability to defend themselves at one of the most dangerous places that they might go to on any given day. It was Senate Bill 5444. It did pass into law. It was signed by Governor Inslee. Now, it had a little like addendum in there. I think they had to add it later on because there was so much blowback that if you have a concealed pistol license, you're still able to conceal carry at a bus stop. Because it's like, well, if you can't have a gun at a bus stop, then you can't have a gun on a bus either, because you got to go to the bus stop to get on the bus, if that makes sense, right? So it said it was an act relating to restricting the possession of weapons, excluding carrying a pistol by a person licensed to carry a concealed pistol on the premises of libraries, zoos, aquariums, and transit facilities. So again, it's just kind of odd. Like, I don't think a 15-year-old or young gang members, and the suspects sound like they're very young teens as well, I don't think that they're legally able to carry a firearm. I know for damn sure they don't have a concealed pistol license. So what on earth were they doing with firearms on a bus? It is truly a mystery. It's a mystery I don't know that I have the wisdom to be able to understand or explain. You know what's interesting? I had Representative Roger Goodman on the show, a month ago or so, and we were debating back and forth about some of the really bad public safety policies that he's pushing through his committee in Olympia that are still alive today. We'll talk about that in a moment. And one of the things I asked him, just an off question at the end of the interview, is basically like, okay, you're doing all these things that inarguably are going to make public safety worse. What are you doing to make public safety better? And our back and forth is kind of relevant to the conversation we're having. What are you focused on to help make our communities safer and hold criminals accountable? Are there any bills like that?
Well, it's really in the budget. We're going to be needing to invest in two things. One is crisis outreach. Our public spaces are not safe, or they're not perceived to be safe.
Yeah.
People suffering from behavioral health disorders, rooting through garbage and urinating and lying around. And yeah, running afoul of the law, but there's not a lot of criminal intent there. We need a massive crisis outreach on the streets.
Yeah.
That will make people feel safer, which will align with crime rates coming down to below 2019 levels now. So even though crime rates have come down pre-pandemic, people don't feel safe. And so what we need to do is literally clean up the streets and help those people who are suffering from disorders. That's the top priority as far as I'm concerned, because
let law-abiding citizens carry their guns in those places, because you guys are trying to take away our ability to carry a gun to protect ourselves in some of those places. So if you could that would be helpful.
Okay. I mean, I could give you a bureaucratic response. That's in another committee, although I do sit on that.
That's another committee, although I sit on that committee too. And again, it's just like you're saying that your way to make these places safer, and it has been, is to pass laws that restrict the ability to carry firearms and weapons in those places, which would be a great law if criminals followed laws. Criminals don't follow laws. So the only people who are going to abide by those policies are law-abiding gun owners who could use those firearms safely and effectively to protect themselves or to protect other people. I mean, if somebody else had had a gun on that bus, maybe a 15-year-old wouldn't have been shot in the chest three times. So it's just wild to me. And I would also note at the time that this is happening and that they're saying, oh, we want to protect, you know, make these transit facilities more safe. Goodness gracious, what are we going to do that? They are also still today, and they're still alive. We'll see where everything's at as of Friday. But they're still pushing those two bills we've talked about over and over on the show to take it easy on criminals. And I would note that one of them, House Bill 1178, specifically has two provisions that would reduce sentencing enhancements for what? For people who use guns to commit crimes and for gang members. That seems pretty damn relevant to the shooting that happened on the King County Metro bus and to many other shootings that are happening in King County and South King County in particular. So they don't want these things to happen, yet they're quite literally doing exactly what I would do if I wanted more of these things to happen. So you're talking about a clear issue of gang activity. And by the way, a lot of innocent people ride buses. So if you're not concerned about gang-on-gang violence, well, there's a lot of risk for innocent bystanders to be shot and killed on buses when these things happen. But again, it's like if I had to come up with a framework and a plan to increase gang shootings, to increase shootings and homicides, I would carry out the actions that the legislature is carrying out today. I would say, hey, lower sentences for people who use guns to commit crimes. I would say, hey, lower sentences for gang members who recruit younger gang members to commit felony crimes on their behalf, because we know what that does, right? So you're going to have older gang members who continue to recruit minor gang members to commit crimes on their behalf because they know that they're going to get a much, much lighter sentence. And that's what they tell the 15, 16, 17-year-old gang member is, hey, you go shoot this guy on the bus. Because if you're caught and convicted, then you're only going to go to a juvie center till you're 21. Maybe not even that. Who knows? So everything they're doing actually leads to more of these types of shootings. And they want to act like they're the ones who are doing something righteous by banning guns and, oh, we're making our communities more safe and all these things, when they're very clearly making communities and buses and trains less safe. It's a mystery. Criminals don't follow gun laws. It's weird. It's weird. We made a law. The law says you can't have a gun, 15-year-old. Why did you have a gun? It's so, so strange. All right. I have done every crash diet, fad diet known to man. I mean, I think quite literally fasting, keto, paleo, starvation. What else have I done? The one where you just drink hot water and a little concoction of lemonade and spices. Wow. I mean, literally everything. Struggled with weight my whole life. The only program that's ever worked for me in the long term is Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I started my Eastside Weight Loss Clinic journey October 2022. Within 2 months, I'd lost 30 pounds. And I lost 40 pounds total. And they give you some simple lifestyle changes to be able to keep the weight off. I won't name them, but I saw a state lawmaker the other day who did Eastside. She looks so good. Did you see me at the rally the other day? I was like, you're tiny. Yeah, she's doing Eastside. I was like, it's good for you, man. Holy smoke. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Look, not every weight loss program is right for every person. So schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team so they can figure out if it's right for you. eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. All right. I just want to say, and I, should have made a bigger deal of this at the beginning of the show, I just want to wish everyone out there a very, very happy Aromantic Spectrum Awareness Week. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, let's see what the educators of our youth are up to, shall we? Washington Education Association on social media talking about the issue of the week. Improving test scores? No. Improving attendance? Absolutely not. Improving anything? No. But they do want to, well, I guess that's not fair. They do want to improve public awareness for Aromantic Spectrum Awareness Week. According to the WEA, for many people, February is a celebration of romance. But did you know that some people experience little to no romantic attraction? They identify as aromantic, and February 16th through the 22nd of this year is Aromantic Spectrum Awareness Week. Learn more. These are the teachers. That's the union that represents public school teachers. before we even get into what the hell Aromantic Sexual Awareness Week is, why are you posting something like this? And again, they want to act like, oh, you guys overblow our political and social indoctrination and this stuff isn't happening. This is the union that represents every single public school teacher in the state of Washington. And this is the only sort of nonsense they post. We just talked about a post that was posted by the Tumwater Education Association with a trans flag. And we want, you know, we're supportive of you. This is all they do. They spend so much time doing this, which is so weird when test scores are in the toilet, attendance is down, enrollment is down, etc. So let's click on the learn more link, shall we? I'd like to learn more. Oh, let's see. It was funny because I don't know if it was Matt Gilbert saying on social media that he read it as aromatic awareness, sexual awareness week.
Aroma,
yeah.
Aromatic.
No, aromatic.
I know, but
aroma.
I know, but I'm breaking it down.
Sure, okay, gotcha. And so he thought it was like people who are turned on by scent, which I guess scent is a strong aphrodisiac. Yeah, some. Isn't that what you said? We were picking a scent for our studio.
I did.
And you picked vanilla because you said it was an aphrodisiac. I'm like, who? I'm the only one here with you. Who are you trying to turn on? Like, I'm not interested, Nicole.
For a guest.
Are you trying to turn our guests on? Super strange. So this is what that links to. Aromantic Spectrum Awareness Week. What is it? What is aromanticism? Is a romantic orientation which describes people whose experience of romance is disconnected from normative societal expectations, often due to experiencing little to no romantic attraction, or sometimes feeling repulsed by romance, or being uninterested in romantic relationships. That's just an ugly person, right? Isn't it? Instead of, because you're like so alone in the basement eating Cheetos and playing video games that you're
Ouch. Like,
I'm not... It's not that I can't find someone. It's that I'm aromantic.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I could find someone if I wanted to, but I'm repulsed by romance.
Yeah, maybe I should go with that.
Yeah. Why is Nicole single? Oh, she's aromantic. She's repulsed. She's repulsed by romance. Oh, my God. It's good.
I can't believe they gave it a flag. Do we really need a flag?
You can't believe that?
I mean, I can because this is where we live now, but stop. Stop with the flags.
It's just insane. All right. You know what else is repulsive? This is the subject of our daily subscriber show poll, which we'll get to in a moment. But so here I am, innocent me. Actually, can we do a second dose of unbelievable before? I don't want to miss it. So, okay. Thank you. Boop. So here I am on social media, and I've just got on my Facebook only a few pages I follow because I don't want a bunch of nonsense in my timeline. But a couple of the pages I follow have to do with animal rescues, including the Seattle Humane Society. And I pretty frequently will comment on their posts for adoption when they've got like an animal up for adoption because I want to boost it, right? So if I comment on it as a verified page, then more people are going to see it. And I'm like, oh, it's a cute little dog. You know, I love animals and all that. So, and I'll share some of their stuff if they have a dog that's been there for a long time and hasn't been adopted or whatever it is. So I'm scrolling, and this is the day before Valentine's Day, and I come across this post which explains a Valentine's Day fundraiser that they're going to do at Seattle Humane. Let me read it for you, shall I? Okay. Poops, we did it again. Great. We're raising funds and spreading the love this Valentine's Day by bringing back our holiday specials for your loved ones and others. Sure, you can send your special someone a cute e-card featuring adorable shelter pets for $5, but wouldn't you rather stick it to that ex, you know the one, and put their name in one of our litter boxes? A shelter cat will generously add another special gift for them, so you can pay $25 to have a cat poop in a litter box and then put a little heart next to that piece of poop with the name of someone you don't like, right? Okay, so that's number one. And then it says, our shelter dogs are also standing by, and for a donation of $25 or more, we'll write that not-so-special someone's name on a poop bag and throw it in the nearest trash can or cyber truck we can find. Interesting. So for $25, you can either have cat crap in a cat bin and put a little thing on it, or you can pay to write the name of someone you don't like on a doggy poop bag, have a dog take a poop at the shelter, pick it up with the poop bag with that person's name on it, and they will, quote, throw it in the nearest trash can or cyber truck. So then, after Valentine's Day, they posted this post. which showed a dog pooping. Great, because they wanted to let people know how their fundraiser went. And in it, there's a guy who does their social media, and he's holding up a bag that says Elon. And they said they got 7 donations with people wanting to put the name Elon on a poop bag, which they kind of asked for, right? When they said, hey, we'll do this and throw it in a trash or in the nearest Cybertruck we can find. So they posted these pictures along with this. It would be great for animal shelters to not have to rely on silly fundraising campaigns to keep the lights on. You would think just because of the many ways we show up for pets and the people who love them, the donations would naturally come pouring in. You'd think social media guy would have better things to do on Valentine's Day than follow dogs around waiting for them to defecate. Well, I guess you'd be wrong. Happy Valentine's Day. And it was this video again with him, like, with the things with the name on it and saying there were 7 donations for Elon and then the dog pooping, right? So look, I have a sense of humor. Haha, I'm funny. I like funny things, okay? I was so pissed off by this. I genuinely was, because here I mean, the reason is obvious. First of all, in this post, they're complaining they don't get enough donations. That you would think just because of all the ways we show up for animals, we'd be flooded with donations, right? And then they proceed to post these things taking, like, completely unprompted shots at Elon Musk. Like, we'll throw the crap bag in a trash can or in a Cybertruck. And then, of course, people bought bags and put Elon on them for $25 and picked up poop with that. And I guess it just bothers me, because it's like, and we're going to have your opinions in a second on to whether I just need to chill out and it's not a big deal. But, like, animals should be something that unite us. This should not be a political issue to want to get shelter dogs, homes, and all these things. But I'll tell you, even me, and I have a pretty thick skin, I'm like, I'm not sharing your posts anymore. I mean, I'm going to, because I love the dogs. But it's like, you're going to alienate conservatives. And I understand conservatives account for maybe 20% of Seattle's population. But you don't think there's conservatives who volunteer or donate money or rescue animals from the Seattle Humane Society? So in a post where you're complaining that you don't get enough donations, you have to do stupid little fundraising shticks like this, you're also simultaneously alienating a big percentage of people who would give you donations, who are giving you donations, who volunteer and adopt animals. It just seems so ridiculous to me. It's like everything has to be political. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X about this Valentine's Day fundraiser. I said, what do you think? The options are, it's fun, calm down, Brandy. Or I agree, leave politics out of it. Nicole, what do you have for me?
Oh, I say leave politics out of it. However, I'm not surprised that this came from a Seattle facility, right? Because yes. I mean, you're just looking for anything, like read the room, and they did. That's all anybody is talking about in Seattle, right? But it
doesn't make it right. So they think they'll get more donations by just hating on conservatives right. in Seattle, right? But,
At the same time, what bothers me the most is the picture of the dog crapping. I don't like pictures of dogs crapping because I think it's very invasive and rude to the dog who comes across very, you know.
Vulnerable,
and it's very inappropriate. I don't like it.
I mean, would you like somebody to take a picture of you?
No.
I mean, I know you don't do that because we're ladies. But nobody, I agree with you. Why would you do that?
Would you do that? And I don't like it. The calendars people do. No, stop. That's so mean. These dogs who look all, you know, tough and mean and are trying to protect you. And then you take pictures of them in their most vulnerable position.
And that's not the picture that's going to get a dog adopted. That's just going to remind people that, exactly. God, dogs poop everywhere and I don't want to adopt them. So what's the deal? I mean, let me read some of your responses. It's fun, calm down, Brandy. Or I agree, leave politics out of it. Let me see. Rick says, animal shelters have a hard enough time getting support. Why would you risk alienating people over politics? See, I agree. Wanna Move Mama says, we lost all respect for Seattle Humane Society decades ago. They repeatedly show their far left liberalism. We prefer to support the more conservative rescue group. And I get that, but it's not the animals' fault. And that's the thing, is I don't want people to stop donating to Seattle Humane Society or stop adopting animals. I just want Seattle Humane Society to realize this is stupid. And there's no reason to alienate anyone when it comes to rescuing animals. Big Mike says, wait, there are conservatives in Seattle? Huh, learn something new every day. To which E responds, not funny. There are independents in Seattle, a lot of us actually, that think for ourselves and don't bow down to a label. We are humans, not soup cans. That's funny. I've never heard that. They stop labeling me. I'm a human, not a soup can.
Right. I think you should, or he, they could have done an Elon one and then, you know, I don't know, a Biden one or a Kamala one or I don't know, something like even it out.
Well, I think that's an important detail. Had they just done the fundraiser itself is funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's cute. And then people just happen to pay $25 to write Trump or Elon on the bag.
Right.
Then that's just what people chose, because you could choose any name you wanted. But it's before the fundraiser, them saying, and then we'll throw it in a Cybertruck. So clearly they wanted it to be sort of a political
type thing. They knew how it was going to go.
They knew what they were doing. George says, can progressives do anything without personal attacks? No. Why? I hate when anything brings in politics, but this isn't even about politics. It's their morals. They're displaying and spreading hate and making a joke of such bullying behavior. That's what's wrong. I don't care that they are the Humane Society. They should be ashamed of themselves. And again, I'm not taking out their ridiculousness on the animals. Maybe I'll make a donation and I'll say, for the animals, not for you losers.
I want to know who on their staff has a Cybertruck.
Why do you think that somebody on their staff has a Cybertruck?
Whose Cybertruck are they throwing the poop in?
They said.
Are they going to throw it at a Cybertruck?
They said, or the nearest trash can or Cybertruck we can find.
Oh, we can find.
I mean, I think it's a joke. I think they're probably just throwing in the trash. I hope somebody in the neighborhood didn't like find a bunch of dog craps with the name Elon on it in a Cybertruck. But anyway, so most of you agree with me. Leave politics out of it. Although there's roughly 10% who say, it's fun. Calm down, Brandy. I'll never calm down. I'll never calm down. The show wouldn't be fun if I were calm. And actually, you don't want to see me calm, because calm is serious and calm is scary. All right. Unbelievable.
Truth.
Calm is serious.
Truth.
It's like if you have kids and it's quiet in the house. It's like terrifying, right? That's what I always hear from my friends who have kids. It's like, that's too quiet.
Too quiet.
Yeah, you don't want to see me quiet and calm. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next, including some organs about to be a third of the size it is right now. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, but you're wondering kind of how is the market looking right now, so you might think the market is slow, but in reality, and it is a little slow, it's actually a pretty good time to list your home because the real issue is low inventory, not low buyer demand. There's still a ton of buyer demand out there. There's just not a lot of homes to choose from, and that's good if you're a home seller, because homes that do hit the market are selling quickly, and there's so many limited options that if they find a good one that's been prepared for sale, like Wes Jones and his team do, you know, come in, do some cosmetic upgrades, they're going to jump all over that. And the spring market is already kicking off. So listing now allows sellers to get ahead of the increased competition that we'll see coming up later this spring. And in reality, February, March, May, those are the top months of the year to list a home. So, and of course, properly prepared listing, if it's priced correctly, those are the ones that are performing the best. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He can go over sort of what the market is doing in your area, give you a free market analysis, and then talk about what he would want to do with your home or to your home to make sure it sells for top dollar. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's escape the insanity of Washington State and go just a couple hundred miles away to the insanity of Oregon. We have a lot of dumb bills this session. We have a lot of dangerous bills this session. But I gotta say, this bill out of Oregon probably trumps all of them. This is House Resolution 3, and the only intent of it is so the state of Oregon honors black drag queens. Oh yes, you heard that correctly. Nicole, I like the picture you selected for this one. Is that a black drag queen? I think so.
I believe so.
Yes, it says, whereas
that's what came up in Adobe.
Oregon has a rich tradition of building, supporting, and celebrating LGBTQ communities, and the black drag community in Portland is among the most vibrant and storied in the entire nation. Whereas Portland's black drag community is deeply rooted in an illustrious history of fantasy, and members of the community help build the foundations of what will become known as the international court system by recognizing queens of community organized events as far back as 1958. And then they talk about Rochelle, who in 1969 was crowned the first black rose queen at the Days of Wine and Roses Fall Ball. This is really important stuff here. I'm learning a lot about Portland's black drag history. In 1970, Portland's black drag community connected with the blossoming concept of the court with the formation of two parallel nonprofit organizations, the Portland Forum and the Imperial Sovereign. What is this? This is mental illness stuff. I'm just going to be honest. Like, this whole thing goes through this history of black drag. And none of it makes any sense.
And not only are they passing a resolution, which whatever, everything gets a resolution these days, but they're holding public hearings so people can talk about this. This is the most important thing that's going on in Oregon right now.
No, not when 2/3 of the state wants to secede and join Idaho, as we'll talk about right now, because that bill's just dumb. So I'm not going to give it any more airtime. So you guys know in Oregon, and actually in Washington, some people have wanted to move part of Washington into Idaho, although there haven't been any real serious efforts in that regard. In Oregon, I would say they're taking that concept a little more seriously. Like, there's a whole, Nicole was navigating this, what is the Greater Idaho Movement website? Which I'm also, does Idaho want them? I think we could talk about that in a moment. But so there's all these counties that want to, so if you're watching, the graphic is, so you look at the current makeup, Idaho in red, Oregon in blue. The proposed makeup would take like 2/3 of Idaho into, or 2/3 of Oregon into Idaho. So Idaho would become just this massive state. And then you have a bunch of counties that have already passed measures saying they want to secede from Oregon and join Idaho. And actually, I was surprised. It's kind of similar in Washington state, isn't it? Most of Oregon is red. When you look at the presidential election results, like all but 11 counties, all but 11 counties in Oregon, you know, around Portland and stuff, are red. So a lot of them are just sick and tired of the nonsense, and they're sick of Portland dictating everything that's happening. So it's a very similar feeling to what we have. So there is a bill in the Oregon State Legislature, Oregon House Bill 3488, which would create a Move Oregon to Idaho task force. So it would actually set it up, because you can have counties that individually vote to secede, but there's essentially not a legal mechanism for them to actually do so. So the idea, I guess, being, and they would call it Greater Idaho instead of just Idaho, it'd be Greater Idaho. The idea would be that this is a task force that actually looks at this whole concept and whether it's actually something that can be done. It says it establishes the Move Oregon Idaho Border Task Force to document the state and federal legal and legislative processes that must take place to relocate the Oregon and Idaho state boundaries to include specified Oregon counties in Idaho, that have, the ones that have voted to secede, directs the task force to study and document the impacts of the proposed relocation on residents, businesses, and other specified entities. So the one thing I would say about this, and Nicole, can you go back to the graphic that has the proposed Greater Idaho boundaries? Because what would they do, like the counties that haven't voted to secede? Like, you see that little tiny looking little blob one up in the upper left that has voted to secede? Like, could you take that? And then the shape of Idaho would be really weird? Or do you just have to cut them out? Because unfortunately, they're surrounded by counties that didn't vote to secede. So that would be strange. I don't know what they do with that little guy.
In the Trump map, you'll see some of those counties that voted blue seem to have also passed a measure.
No, that's not true. Nope.
Right.
Wait, where? No, you made that up. You made that
I
up.
Did.
Take that back. Take that back.
Right here.
No.
Okay, voted for Trump, and you can see there's just these blue ones left, right, over here. And this, oh, I guess that's the Idaho blue.
Nicole, it's
okay,
not true.
Never mind.
But one of the things I would say, and I'm just going to be honest, and this is something, a sentiment that progressives in Seattle say all the time, is like, for all the hand-wringing over Seattle rules the day and everything Seattle wants goes, Seattle and King County provide a lot of the money that the rest of the state uses to fund things. And that is true. I mean, they have an outsized number of the, like, percentage of the population. And so they have an outsized amount of revenue coming in, et cetera. And some of that gets spread to all the other red counties that despise King County. So my question on that, Nicole, if you can go back to that, is if you were to take all those rural counties that are small, that are sparsely populated, that don't really bring a lot economically with them, then Idaho, I mean, they'd get all these counties, but would they get the money to be able to support all the people in those counties? Would it be enough? Because then you have, you know what I mean? Because Idaho has the same situation. It's usually like one or two counties that really are the economic engines for the entire state. So I want to know what Idaho thinks, because I'm not sure Idaho has the economy that could prop up getting like 25 or so new counties from Oregon who aren't big economic drivers in the first place, if we want to talk about it seriously. So
I don't know.
And then especially if half Washington wants to join Idaho, then they have no money left.
This might be a good Sunday show topic.
You know, it might
look into it.
Okay, we'll have to have somebody from the Greater Idaho Movement on the show to talk about all of it. All right, we are going to get to comments in our closing sanity check. For the love of God, the most cringeworthy clip I have seen from a politician in a very long time. First, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, which, by the way, don't miss episode 2 of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham and I coming up tonight. It's going to be a very good one. But Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are having their next free live webinar Thursday, March 20th. So it's 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can sign up totally free, knowyourriskradio.com. So this is his first 100 days webinar. So he's going to cover all the rapid changes in the first 100 days of the Trump administration, how they could impact your retirement portfolio. They'll do a longer term outlook for all of 2025, and they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So run your retirement portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency. So sign up for their webinar Thursday, March 20th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, totally free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Okay, let's get to some comments, shall we? Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. Washington GOP needs a complete overhaul. They need to focus on killing mail-in ballots. The current leadership thinks it's 1982 and the left has ethics. I just disagree. I don't think that focusing on trying to kill mail-in balloting is going to be a winning proposition in the foreseeable future, especially if you're going to start in King County. Now, I don't know if the results would be different if it were in-person voting. It seems like Republicans, to me, like to use that as an excuse for why they're not resonating with voters. And let's just be honest, Republicans have no bench. Couldn't tell you right now who's going to run as a Republican for governor in 2028. Could not tell you if there's anyone even remotely electable. They have no bench. They are not great at organizing, although I think they've been trying to get a little bit better at that. And you still have this infighting that just tears the party apart. I mean, how many crazy, you know, angry birds from semi-bird supporters still attack me on social media on every single day. Like, we're not listening to Brandy. It's okay. Like, okay, I'm one of the only people in the media who even gives Republicans a fair shot. So if you want to alienate me, fine. So I think there's a lot of problems with the Republican Party in the state that, like, aren't going to be fixed by changing mail-in voting to in-person voting. And I don't think statewide there's an appetite to do that. I mean, I like mail-in voting. I'm also not going to abuse it. So I get the concern, but I just think it's kind of a lazy excuse. We're not winning because of mail-in voting. I think there's a lot of reasons Republicans aren't winning in the state of Washington. So maybe think about focusing on some other things first. B. Larson, $10 super chat. Here's a thought. How about you lawmakers figure out a way to spend our tax dollars more responsibly instead of just screaming and demanding more money? Grow the F up. I agree. We're going to have a segment on the show tomorrow. So there's a Washington Doge that has some volunteers on social media that are digging up all these crazy things that your tax money has been spent on. There are some nuts things in there that I had to see to believe. So we're going to do a whole segment on it tomorrow to talk about WADOGE and what they're uncovering. One of them was, I talked about this with Zach Abraham on the first episode of Doge Watch, how one of the things they're uncovering nationally, all these tax dollars that are being spent on subscriptions to entities like Associated Press and Politico, which I'm sort of okay with some of that. But in Washington state, there's like six figures being spent on Politico subscriptions. Why do state bureaucrats need government taxpayer paid subscriptions to a national entity, Politico? I get a little bit of that if it's like the Seattle Times or whatever it is, because if you're working in areas where you need access to stories that are being done in the media on your policy, I get it. But Politico? That doesn't make any sense. That is strange. Sandy Johnson Fleck, my dad used to say, locks keep the honest people out. I think the same reasoning can apply to guns. Oh, 100%. Yeah, you're just hurting our ability to be able to defend ourselves from increasing crime, increasing shootings, and all of these things. Michelle, sadly, I believe our political class wants chaos on our streets to keep people from venturing out and seeing the truth. Yeah, or just to have control over us. I really think at this point, the public safety thing is intentional because they want you crawling to the government for help and like, yes, take more money from us. Oh my God, we feel so unsafe. So yes, raise our taxes so that we can feel safe. The government wants you to come to them for everything, including a sense of safety and security. So they're going to erode your sense of safety and security. They're going to take away your ability to protect yourself and your family, and you'll have no other recourse than to go to the government. That's what they want. call me a conspiracy theorist, but Michelle, sadly, I believe our political. Oh, I already read that. Bob, how any of this still has momentum after Trump became president? I don't know. I mean, Washington State is just so eager to be the resistance. So it's almost like we've doubled down because Orange Man bad. So I don't know if more people are seeing reason, but the people who were already certifiably unhinged, they're doubling down for sure. They're digging their heels in. So hopefully it backfires because they're still pushing some crazy stuff in Olympia that I just cannot be popular. But then the media doesn't cover it in the way the media should cover it. And so then they get away with it and they think people like it just because there was no pushback to it, but the media didn't cover it in the first place. So it's all this like sick cycle where people are just left in the dark.
Did you see the Trump and Elon interview?
I saw parts of it.
Saw parts of it, but the part that I did see was where Trump said, you know, usually you sign these executive orders and you think you just got something done, but like there's so much pushback to all of this and everybody creating a stir and it's really challenging all of these, you know, what the states can do versus what Trump can do. And it's very interesting. But, you know, if there's a Democrat next time, like, wait for it.
Yep. 100%.
You're going to get the same treatment now. There won't be any easy politics now.
God, it's just wild. Let's see. Sarah D. loves Jesus. That's a good screen name. It all sounds good to move to Idaho. Trump, we need some help. Let's do it. Night Wolf, Olympia will never allow Eastern Washington to secede. They benefit from the agriculture tax revenue. Yeah, I don't know if any of this will ever be allowed, but I mean, it's kind of a nice idea. Like, people talk about leaving Washington State, but there's so many reasons to stay. It's so beautiful here. You have friends and family. But what if you didn't have to move? The state boundary just moved. So you got to stay put. But now you're in Idaho and not Washington State.
Right.
So you have all those good things.
Yep.
Spokane Valley girl, as far as Greater Idaho, and if it would have the economic base to support it, I'm wondering if Greater Idaho would need as much of an economic base if they didn't have to support all the liberal programs that conservatives are against. That's true, because you're still paying taxes in to fund all that dumb stuff we're going to talk about on the show tomorrow and all those liberal programs, even though you don't benefit or want it at all. Let's get in two more super chats. Julian with a $50 super chat. Keep up the good work. Thank you. I will. Woody 2.0, Whiskey Wednesday. Are you drinking? Have you drank?
Oh, but I might after this.
It's been a day. It's always a day.
Tech hates us. It really does.
I quit.
No, you don't.
I quit.
No. We're not the only ones. We're not the only ones that have tech problems.
I did go on Tommy Lahren the other day, and they were late because they had tech problems. It made me feel a little bit better.
See?
And then Elon Musk does all these lives on X, and the quality of them sucks. And I'm like, aren't you Elon Musk?
See?
So
it's not just us.
Yeah, that still doesn't make me feel better. Sorry. All right, can I get to our closing sanity check? Because it is the worst thing I've ever seen. So Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell. Oh, sorry. Sanity check. My apologies. Don't want to rob anyone of anything. Great. Okay, so Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell had his State of the City address, which is already lame. Who wants to watch that anyway? But he had this huge moment and this huge announcement.
Right now, at this moment, I have an announcement to make. I'm just kidding. Okay. It's a long speech. I had to break it up a little bit here.
Who approved that stunt? They had to be like, get a basketball. Oh, is my basketball on the podium? And I'm going to pull it out and be like, oh. Oh my God, the crowd was so pissed.
I watched the beginning of it and he looks to make sure the basketball's there because he was so excited.
I mean, to think that that's a good joke of any kind, oh my God, is literally mortifying. Like, read the room. And again, I have a sense of humor, but people want the Sonics back so bad and they've actually been working toward it. So you better have an announcement forthcoming that the Sonics are coming back and that was just sort of premature. People are eviscerating him online over this. It was just, you know, some people don't have the best sense of humor. It's just bad.
Well, the state of the cities don't get enough attention these days.
Well,
so
again, maybe he's just
got
like,
a little attention.
I guess maybe he thinks people watch my speech if they see this. But yeah, he's being absolutely eviscerated online. Not good. So that has been our sanity check for today. That has been, are we on time? Holy smokes. When's the last time we had an episode end on time?
Oh, it's probably been like 6 months.
Yep.
You're welcome on this hump day. That has been today's hump day episode of Undivided. Maybe I'll donate to Seattle Humane just to like tell them, hey, I love the dogs. Hey. I just want you to stop.
No, they got donations that way. So yeah. You can donate to, you know, Bellevue one or
where I'll buy a poop bag and I'll write Turd Ferguson on it.
You'll buy one. Don't you have them and you can just take Lucky for a walk? About,
I'll donate $25 to them and make them write Turd Ferguson on the poop bag. All right. If you haven't signed up to support our show already, you can do it for $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. And we'll subscribe and I'll pick up my dog's poop with whatever name you want to write on their poop bags.
There you go.
So I'm not actually going to do that, but, you know, it's a nice thought. All right. See you tomorrow for a final live show of the week.